welcome to The Convex Conversation with me, journalist Helen Fospero. A few weeks ago, my agent called. She told me about one of the oldest riding stables in London, which was faced with closure, but meant a lot to her friend Natalie O'Rourke, who runs the stables, and also to her little boy Woody, who has Down syndrome. Park Lane Stables in Teddington helps many disabled children, able-bodied riders, works with people in respite, young offenders, and basically makes riding accessible to all. But a few weeks ago, they were faced with the need to raise £1 million in a hurry as the leaseholder wanted to sell. It seemed a mammoth task. I put out a few posts on social media, but household names like Rob Brydon, who lives locally, got right behind the campaign.
These stables are enchanting because they're in a suburban street and near Bushey Park. So during lockdown, we've done a lot of walks to Bushey Park. And as you walk along the street, suddenly here is this stable. And it's, you know, beyond whatever it does for people, just stumbling upon it is a lovely thing. And there's always a horse with its head over the stable door right onto the pavement, and you can come up and stroke it. And then, you know, I heard this this story of what was happening and the trouble they were in. And it just struck me as such a terrible shame, because when I heard about the good work that it was doing for all sorts of people, it just seemed, you know, with the pandemic and everything, it just seemed like, oh, God, no, there's something else, you know. It just seemed wrong.
Thanks to celebrities like Rob appearing on national television and impressionist Rory Bremner tweeting, the seemingly impossible target was reached and the great British public have saved the day. And news has even reached Her Majesty. So I'm delighted to be joined by Natalie, who I'm sure has had some sleepless nights running this emergency campaign, as well as looking after the horses and her children. I mean, Natalie, what an extraordinary story.
Extraordinary is a really apt word, yes, for this. Yeah, it's really unbelievable. And we just keep pinching ourselves all the time because we can't believe that it's actually happened. I always believe, but the fact that so many people believed with me is just magical, really. It's the only way I can describe it.
Tell us the story and why you needed to raise this money in such a hurry.
Well, we'd leased the stables for 12 years, and it's really hard for anybody that is in the riding industry because horses hemorrhage money. We were ticking along, and then COVID came along, and we congratulated ourselves for surviving the pandemic, to be honest. And we thought we'd done really well because we were still here, and so many other riding centres had folded because of the COVID. So we were congratulating ourselves, and then we were hit with a curveball, which was our landlord, for no fault of his own. I mean, everybody was hit by the pandemic in different ways, had told us that he had to sell our beloved building and that we had to leave on the 31st of May. So I took a bit of time to digest this, and I was trying to deal with it on my own, if I'm honest, because I was really aware that so many vulnerable people depend on us, and I didn't want to share this really bad news because I was trying to protect them. And then a really lovely lady said to me, who's a parent of a young man with additional needs, she said to me, "You can't protect anybody, Natalie, if you're shouldering this on your own. And the only way you can protect them and move forward is to share the stories." I gently told people, but I said, "It'll be okay, it'll be okay." And then obviously with COVID, it was like, everything felt like it was against us. And honestly, I don't know what happened, but I just thought, let's just go for it on New Year's Eve, because people might be in the right frame of mind. They might think they're turning over a new leaf, and let's turn the new leaf together. So we launched the crowdfunder on New Year's Eve, and the rest, as they say, is history, really.
Well, do share it with us, because I know money started coming in, and quite a lot of money coming in, but you were still a very, very long way from the target. What was the game changer, do you think?
Well, the money came slowly, and it was initially people that were friends of Park Lane Stables and people that knew us and trusted us and believed in us. And then the big game changer was a guy in the horse racing industry, actually, and he's called Nick Luck. And I have to admit that I'm a horse lady. I like horses. I like people. I'm not very good, as you've just found out, with technology and things like that. And somebody said to me, a really, really amazing lady actually said to me, Natalie, you have some blue tick followers on Twitter. I had no idea what a blue tick follower was. She said to me, you have to contact your blue tick followers. And one of them was Nick Luck. So he actually took us under his wing, and we had no money at that point, remember? And he said, you know what? Come on my podcast. And he kind of gave us some hope, I suppose. And I think there was probably times when he was thinking, why have I got on board with this? But what happened was he got the racing industry behind us, which was really, really important. And obviously we've not got racehorses, but we've all got a common denominator here. We all love horses on different levels, and they're people from very different backgrounds to us. And he got them to listen. And they got us, really, with the local community, they got us to 500,000. And then we were a bit like, now what should we do?
Because the clock was ticking, wasn't it?
The clock was ticking very, very loudly. And the really scary thing was that I did a really stupid thing, and I worked out how long we'd got left in hours. And that was...
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that was really stupid, because then I worked out how long that I could... Sorry, here's Woody.
That's okay. Hey, Woody. Hello, Woody.
This way.
Hi.
Then I worked out how many hours I could kind of afford to sleep, really, which was really thing to do. But the point is that there wasn't much time left, and there was a lot of money, you know, left to raise. Someone stepped in from the racing industry and made a really big donation at a really key time. So this gentleman, he actually donated £50,000 at a time when we'd kind of stalled, if we're honest. And I think he listened to me. I didn't know him. I'd never met him. And he just... I was on the phone to him for an hour, and I'd had a lot of hour-long conversations that had led nowhere. And at the end of the conversation, he said to me, okay, I'll give you £50,000. And I was like, I think I was like, oh my God, I can't speak. And I thought, my gosh, this guy, I've never met him. He listened to me and he believed in us. And that is a massive amount of money. So when we went on BBC Breakfast, we were at 5:30. No, 5:50, sorry. And then they played this sort of trail. I think that's what TV people call it. And it went up by 30,000. And we were all jumping around outside waiting for the live broadcast, going, oh my God, it's gone up by 30,000. We just couldn't believe it. And then we went live on the telly, and my heart was banging so loud. I thought, blimey, the whole country's going to hear my heart. Well, while we were still on television, the phone started ringing. And it just was like the most incredible thing. I mean, we still can't believe it, but the kindness that we have received, and the most amazing thing is that this was the power of the people. That the guy that I mentioned, yeah, he believed, and he was in a position to pledge a lot of money, but the majority of this money has come from, dare I say, ordinary people that were touched by what we were doing. And we've had donations, you know, £2, £3, £1. And that is what has made this huge amount of money. And I think that is what is so powerful about it, that we didn't get any government funding. There was no corporate funding. There's nobody behind us saying, oh, here's a massive chunk of money, have it, apart from that one gentleman who doesn't want his name to be mentioned. He's just a really kind-hearted man. And when COVID's over, I'm going to give him the biggest hug ever when I ever meet him. But the point is, it was that it was many, many people that made it. It was like many drops of water, you know, made the ocean. And that is what happened. And we're handwriting back to every single person that has written to us. And it's so endearing that in this world we live in, this technical world that I'm not very good at, people have bothered to go to the post office, get a postal order. You know, remember those? That would take so much effort, and then leave their home, go to the post office, get the postal order in COVID, remember, then post it. And I just think, God, that is so powerful that they believed in us. So we're handwriting back to every single person, which some people have said to me, that's silly, and you could just print cards. And I said, yeah, but we're not like that here. That wouldn't work for me. I feel like we need to write back to every single person that wrote to us. If it takes us to the end of the year, we will do it. And
it's a team effort. You can all get involved in that.
Well,
I
we've
totally
got lovely volunteers that are doing it. Yeah, really, really, really lovely volunteers.
And my mum rang today, Natalie, because she knew that we were chatting and was like, oh my goodness, the Queen knows about it and they've been invited to see the Queen's horses. Tell me a bit about that. What's happened there?
We have an army of volunteers and, you know, without them, we wouldn't be able to do anything. And one particular volunteer said to me, oh, what could we do, Natalie? And I said, well, you could write some letters, you know, good old fashioned letters. And I won't name and shame the people that didn't reply, but there were many. There were many in high profile positions. But they wrote to the Queen and the Queen replied. I mean, how amazing is that to receive reply from the Queen? And to say that 12 people can go to Buckingham Palace and meet the horses and also just learn about how they care for their horses and see a different side of the horse. I just think it's magical and that she took notice of us because, you know, we're so tiny, but it was just lovely that she read the letter and took the time to respond and that these people are going to get the opportunity to go there. And I really think that it could inspire, it could shape the rest of their whole lives because I'm talking about young people that are referred here for many different reasons. And imagine, you know, a 14-year-old person that has been sent here for difficult reasons and then we're like, you're going to go to Buckingham Palace. That person, I really want the young people to be like, anything is possible now. Because
and
it
I
is.
Hope you'll go as well, Natalie, won't you? When
We're having a conversation about that because I feel really uncomfortable about taking up a place because I think I couldn't live with myself if I took the space of, let's just say, a 14-year-old boy that had been referred here from social services and I went instead. I don't think I could. It would make me much happier for him to go than me, put it that way.
You say the stables are tiny. They're tiny, but they're such
like
a special
Lilliput.
Place. Will you explain to our listeners why they're such a special place and the wonderful work that you do at the stables?
Well, it's like the only way I can describe it really is like a safe haven. It's like a safe space for so many people. So when I opened it, my goal was for it to be a friendly, accessible place where anybody that was interested in horses, or not even interested, but was curious even, could come and they'd be welcome. We all know what children are like, you know, they'll try something and it's not for them. And I think that's absolutely fine because how do you know if you don't try it? But the ethos is that we're here for anybody and everybody. That was the start of it. And then it kind of grew into this. We became known to have a reputation as being, schools would send children that they would say, we don't know what to do with this child. Please, can you take this child? And we would say, okay, yeah. And then we'll try, we'll have a go. And I can't take the credit really because it's the horses that make the magic happen. And the horses are great levelers. It's really hard to explain, but it's just a safe haven for so many. And it's really hard because we can't talk about a lot of the scenarios why young people are sent here. But some young people that have been here have been through really, really difficult episodes in their lives. They're not even adults and they'll come here and it's just, you're welcome. You don't have to ride the horses. You know, people think this is all about horse riding. It's not. Some people never want to get on the horse, but there's so many things that you can learn from being around the horse and the horses give so much. So, yeah, sorry, that was a really long answer.
No, it's fine. But also, you know, you have a lot of disabled children come, don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Woody's got Down syndrome and I posted a picture of Woody actually with one of the horses on my Twitter when this all began. How much does Woody get out of the stables? You know, does he
really
love it
likes
there?
Football. Woody just loves
Brentford.
Football. He loves Brentford. That is Woody's life. His life is Brentford. But the thing about the stables for Woody is not necessarily the horses, it's the people. So it's the fact that Woody, you know, obviously he's still really not very verbal, but he's got people that he can try and communicate with. He's socialised because there's a lot of people here. And he can ride, but only if he's in his Brentford kit. he doesn't want to know. We had to buy stuff for the pony to dress the pony in this Brentford's kit because otherwise he was like, no. And when Woody was a little baby, I used to ride Woody on a horse called Bobby and put Woody in front of me because Woody was really poorly when he was a baby. And it's hard to imagine now because he's such a strapping young man. But Woody couldn't sit. So, I mean, he was my child and people said, oh, that's really ridiculous what you're doing. but I believed in the horses. So I would go on Bobby with Woody and somebody would be leading Bobby. And the motion of the horse, you know, it was working all of Woody's muscles. And now, if you saw Woody now, he can run, he can jump, he can do lots and lots of things, because from a very tiny young age, he did that. And he would rather kick a ball than ride a horse, but...
A lot of the mums of some of your disabled riders appeared on television as well, just explaining that the horses, the animals, the whole team spirit at the stables, it can really help with lots of things, can't it? Like cerebral palsy and all sorts of disabilities.
Yeah, I think there's a massive misconception, I think, that people think that RDA, Riding for the Disabled Association, it's like a donkey ride and, you know, oh, they go around on the horses and isn't that lovely? That's really wrong. And we fight really hard to get the message across that, no, that's not what it is. You know, the horse is so powerful and it's delivering so much to these. You say somebody with cerebral palsy, well, they might be really tight through their legs or their hips, or have really poor trunk control. And, you know, the horse can do so much for them. And then those people that can't manage to ride, and we offer carriage driving. So we're in a fortunate position now that we don't have to say no to anybody, to be honest, because if they can't ride for whatever reason, they can carriage drive and they're still getting all the sensory feedback from it. So...
And of course, social interaction. I mean, that's great that, you know, your able-bodied risers mix with people who've got disabilities, and you really are a team at Park Lane Stables, aren't you? Which is just something else that's wonderful.
Yeah, we're a family, really. We're a Park Lane family, and that includes the horses. But many of our team have disabilities, and there's a handful of us that don't, obviously, otherwise it wouldn't work. But we're really proud that many people that are employed here have additional needs, and, you know, there's no reason why they can't be. And it works really well. And like you've just touched on about the social side of it, a lot of adults with additional needs become very socially isolated, because imagine if you were completely blind and you lived alone, it would be really hard to leave your home. And that's a really important factor that we recognized a few years ago, that hang on, this is so much more than the riding, that we need to offer something when they've ridden, that then they spend time together and then can make friendships. And then when they're not with us, they can go and meet for coffee or just, you know, call each other or something like that. And it's really important to remember that there's a massive social aspect to it as well.
And apart from us all recognising your face, Natalie, Podney has become quite the superstar. Tell us about Podney for those who have been tucked under the stairs.
It's so like heartwarming about that, because I've had Podney since I was a girl, and Podney's 40 now.
40? And,
yeah, we've been on a long journey together. And I joke, you know, that Podney's the longest relationship I've ever had in my life, which is true. But, you know, he's seen some life, that boy. When I came from Birmingham, I brought Podney with me to London. And, yeah, it's just amazing that people have taken him into their hearts, really, because... You know, he's so gentle, he's so giving, and he's been my best friend for I don't know how many years, but he's also taught so many children to ride, and he's never cross with humans. He might get cross with his equine pals, but not with the humans. He's really special, and we hold our breath every winter because it's really hard for him as a horse when there's no grass. And then now we're like, oh, the spring's coming, and we're so happy for Podney, because then he'll just go to the field and no one will see him all summer. Like, all the local people know they won't see Podney like the whole summer, because he eats grass with his gums. And then the winter comes and like, he's back, because there's nothing for him.
Because he's got no teeth, has he?
No.
Oh, bless him.
No, and he's, bless him, like, he doesn't have, touch wood, any other sort of arthritis or anything like that. It's just his teeth that are gone. So we've learned how to manage that. And touch wood, yeah, he's doing really well. But he's just so lovely that he's had a bit of recognition as well, because he's done so much for so many.
You've had some great celebrity support too. How did you get Rob Brydon involved?
Well, if we're honest, we tweeted at him. We tweeted at him and he responded. Yeah, he was just really kind. So all we were hoping for was a tweet. We thought if we can get a tweet, that'll be brilliant if Rob Brydon would tweet. And he just took it so much further than that. And he's been so kind to us.
Well, as we heard in our introduction, he lives locally and so is very aware. I think he often walks past on his way to Bushy Park and sees the horses looking over the doors. And he did appear on a number of national TV shows for you. And we've got a clip, Natalie, of what he thinks about you.
And hearing Natalie, who's done, I mean, what a remarkable person, and the work she's done is amazing. Hearing her saying that she was composing a business plan for the banks, I think this has the making of a Hollywood film. Let me get in and put my cards on the table. I would love, with this face, to be considered for playing one of the horses.
What did you think to what he said there?
We were live on the telly, so we didn't know that he was going to say that. It's really hard to take in what he said. It's really hard to take in the fact that he backed us, let alone that he said that about us. I mean, I don't know. We just always hear and we just do what we do. And I just feel really touched that he even got involved, let alone thought that we were worthy of such an accolade, really.
And he mentioned there that you were thinking about taking out a bank loan. I mean, that happened, didn't it, when you thought
I was doing that the day before. So the BBC did a pre-record and they were here most of the day. And then I had a meeting with the bank. I think it was at 4:00. And I've got to give the bank their due. The lady at the bank was lovely. She was called Kate and she was so patient with me. But she told me I need all these things, you know, the business plan, I need the COVID forecast, I need this, I need that. And, you know, when you're like dying inside, but on the phone going, okay. And then I thought, well, I'm going to have to do it tonight, really. So I stayed up doing that and thinking, oh, I must be up for the BBC at 6:00 and wrote all this stuff for her. And then obviously got up for the horses to be ready. And then we just didn't need it. So, but yeah, we honestly thought that with a really big loan, we were scared about that, obviously. I have emailed that lady and we've had a really nice conversation. And I did say to her, you know, you were really patient with me and she made me feel as if it was going to happen. Because, you know, you don't always get that reception from a bank, do you? But she made me feel like they wanted to help us, which gave me a lot of reassurance. But obviously we didn't need to go there. So,
and it is, you know, Natalie, it is a good story. It's a great story where you've had tens of thousands of individual donations and the great British public really put their back into all this. Have you had any approaches about a film? Because it almost reminds me of a sort of Calendar Girls or something like that.
Yeah, we've had quite a lot of media interest, shall we say. I have to admit, I'm really tough. Well, I think I am. I'm quite a stoic sort of woman. And I don't know if it's a bit like teachers at the end of term, but when we did it, I was just like, I don't know, something happened to my body and was just like, that's enough, just stop. So we had to get a bit of help with the interest. And a really, really lovely man is helping us with that. And I actually sent him a text message earlier today and said, I was thinking about him and what he'd done for us. And I said to him, I don't think it's just doctors and nurses that save lives, because I feel like he saved mine, because I am tough and I am stoic, but all of a sudden I was in a really different situation and I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to deal with it, and I didn't want to get it wrong for the people that need us. And it's a really hard thing to ask for help. And as a tough, stoic woman, I don't mind saying that I found it really, really hard to ask for help. But I reached out to a lady that I trusted and I said, I don't know what to do. I'm in a situation, I feel quite broken, and please help me. And she said, oh, I'll find someone to help you. And then she found me this lovely man, and he's guiding us through this very unusual process that we find ourselves in. And he's not taking any payment from us or anything. So, yeah, I honestly don't know what the outcome of this is going to be. But for me personally, what I would like, obviously, we've saved the stables and that's like incredible. But on a bigger platform, the only thing that I would like to get out of it is for a message to get out there that anybody is welcome to be with horses. You don't have to ride, but, you know, you don't have to be posh. You don't have to be affluent. Anybody can do it. And if we can somehow get that message out that horses are for everybody, not the privileged few, then I'll rest easy then. Then I'll feel like, that's it, I'm done.
Oh, you also have to be kind to yourself, Natalie, because it probably has been a really overwhelming and stressful few weeks. And of course, all the way through it, you're still looking after the horses, you're looking after your two children and your family. And I know horses are 24/7. And so I think you've got to be kind to yourself. And also remember why that million was raised. It was to keep it open for all those people, wasn't it? So Hollywood dreams sound lovely. And if it comes along, I think that'll be great. But I think it's wonderful that you have reached out and you've got some proper help now. I don't know, do you almost sometimes when you get to that goal, almost feel like your body sort of collapses a bit because you can suddenly sort of let go of all that stress and angst?
Yeah, that's literally what happened, I think. That's a really good way of describing it. And I was really surprised that my body reacted like that, because I think I'd been not sleeping. I'd been carrying the weight of 350 disabled people on my back. And I suppose it was just like a massive sense of relief. But also, I can only liken it to, and I don't know how it feels, but if you win an Olympic gold and you've strived for that for years and you've aimed for that one moment, that's how it felt. It felt like, yeah, we've got the gold and that's it. And I think my body was just like, no, just stop now. And now I feel more like me, like I'm back to napped now. But it's taken me like a few days to get over the shock, I think, or the relief. Or I suppose if you spoke to an athlete, they probably get that feeling when they've strived for something and they achieve it, and then they probably have that strange feeling too. Yeah, it was a bit alien to me, but I'm lucky that I had people that I trusted that I could ask for the right help, and now we're going in the right direction.
It's funny you use that Olympic athlete analogy. That's exactly what James Cracknell told me during an interview. That, you know, 1 minute he was on the podium and he'd won gold. And then the next few weeks he felt really flat because he'd worked so hard to that goal. The other person that I noticed, who funnily enough was our podcast guest last week, was Rory Bremner, put a fantastic tweet out.
Hi folks. If I were to tell you that there's a very special place in southwest London where anyone, whether they're young or old, disabled or able-bodied, could go and ride or groom or just spend some quality time with horses, it might warm your heart. If I were to tell you that their lease is up and unless they raise over £1 million, they would have to close their doors forever, it might break your heart. But if I were to tell you that with a week to go, they have raised over £1 million, it might lift your heart, make you want to chip in to guarantee the future at this very special place for all the people to whom it means the world. So go online and look up Save Our Stables and see if you can chip in and make something of a miracle happen.
How did you react when you heard him?
I couldn't believe it. I just thought, well, A, that he's taken the time to do that for us. I just thought, you know, how kind that he's written it, he's made the effort to do it and record it for us. I couldn't believe it. I was absolutely blown away. And what I would say about Rob Brydon and Rory Bremner is, I mean, I don't know, but to my mind, being a celebrity is like a superpower. So they use their superpower in the most kind way. There's loads of celebrities, isn't there? But it is like a superpower and you can use it in whichever way you want. And I just feel like those two people used it for kindness to give to others that really needed help. And I just think that's a really powerful thing that they did for us. Yeah, we were so blown away and grateful for that.
You've done an incredible job, Natalie. I mean, long may Park Lane Stables continue to help children and adults and be such a key part of the community you're in as well. And I hope you can find a time for maybe a little lie down and maybe a glass of wine or two. But thank you so much for squeezing us in, because I know the last few weeks have been absolutely manic and I was so keen to talk to you and hear your story, and hopefully I'll bring my little boy down and we'll help you with a bit of mucking out at some point.
Yeah, that would be lovely, and thank you for listening really and having me on, so thank you.
You're so welcome. You've been listening to Natalie O'Rourke, who runs and has saved Park Lane Riding Stables for the children and adults who get so much from the horses and the riding and all the social side of it too. I think we're going to hear a lot more about Park Lane Stables, and even though they've reached their target to raise £1 million, every pound is still welcome to help with their future. So do go to their website if you'd like to help. Thanks very much for your company today. Download and subscribe to our series at convex.podbean.com, or you can search The Convex Conversation on Spotify, Apple and Google Podcasts, Pipped, or just ask Alexa. Bye for now.